It's time for the Open Mic Podcast with your host, Brett Allen. Broadcasting live from the Bay Area studios, here at the Open Mic, no topic is off limits. And of course, you never know who may stop by. So sit back, relax, and enjoy today's show.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome into episode 80 of the Open Mic Podcast. It is good to be here with you today on this Thursday. Super excited to be hanging out with you. It's been a couple days since we have released an episode. And here we go. We chatted with Bone Hampton the other day. That was such a fun conversation, I have to tell you. He is one of the nicest people I have ever met. And we just laughed and laughed. The interesting thing about doing this podcast is that we talk beforehand and then we usually talk after the guest and myself. And sometimes those conversations are the absolute best, I have to be honest with you. It's just a lot of fun. And I laugh a lot, but I haven't laughed that hard in a really long time. And we just had the best time. Super nice guy. He's one of the funniest comedians that I have ever met. And I've seen a lot of comedy, and he was just the absolute best. And so thank you, Bone, for being a part of the podcast. It's always a pleasure to have such fantastic people on the show. And for episode 80 today, I have a special guest with me on the line right now. I'm super excited to talk to this guy. So his name is Scott Dickers, and he is the co-founder of The Onion magazine, The Onion newspaper, the online source, AV Club. And he has been a comedy writer for a very long time. And I'm excited to have him on the show here. He's on the line. We'll get to him here in just a minute. But I want to give a shout out to Spade Sunshades. They sponsor the podcast. They make amazing sunglasses. Amazing. My friend teases me when I say that, but amazing. He's going to listen to this. So, Isaac, that was for you, buddy. Any case, they make fantastic sunglasses for poker players by poker players. Jeff Weber and his team make fantastic shades. And even if you're not a poker player, they're still really super cool sunglasses. So head over to spadesunshades.com and use promo code BrettsOpenMic to get free shipping on me. Spades Sunshades. That's my attempted cool radio voice. Anyway, let's get on to our guest today. He's on the line right now. Again, as I mentioned, he is the co-founder of The Onion. If you don't know what The Onion is, then you will definitely know by the end of this conversation. And he's done a whole lot of other fantastic things. He has a brand new book coming out, which is called Welcome to the Future, Which is Mine, by Elon Musk. And he wrote the book. It's due out October 2nd, and it's going to be fantastic. So welcome to the podcast, Scott. It's good to have you here today.
It is my pleasure to be here, Brett. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. So let's talk about your background. What kind of got you started doing this particular thing?
That's a longer story, but I will try to truncate it. So I discovered comedy writing at a very young age. I think I was probably, you know, 4 or 5 when my mother taught me to read and write before school. And I got a lot of pleasure from drawing comics and drawing, like making funny books. I would like draw on construction paper and I would staple them together and I would make these books and I would show them to people like my family, my grandmother, whatever. And you know, they're giving you all this praise like, oh, that's so wonderful. And I was an incredibly shy kid and I didn't really make friends very easily. I was incredibly introverted. And so I really didn't have a way to connect with other humans. And this was one way that I found that worked for me. I could draw or write something, show it to people, and they would respond. And I was like communicating with them. It was a connection. And so, you know, as twisted and messed up as that is, that became my way of dealing with the world. And so I'm still that way. I'm still a total recluse. I don't go to parties. I don't go out. I really don't like hanging around with other people. I like to create things and put them out in the world. And, you know, I get a review on Amazon. That's like the equivalent of me going to of a normal person going to a family reunion. All throughout my life, that's what I did, and that's how I connected to people. And it expanded beyond writing, and it got pretty early into sort of like performing and doing little radio skits like on cassette. And I was always doing more. Then I started making movies, always just making stuff and presenting it to people. And I would hang out with other like-minded people doing this sort of stuff. And those were the closest thing I sort of had to friends, like people that I would create other things with. And we would get together and we would just make stuff. We wouldn't like go to parties. We wouldn't like talk. We would make movies or write scripts or, you know, create radio plays or whatever. And so when I got out of high school, I knew that I needed and wanted to do this for a living. Like, what else did I do? That was it. And so my family was incredibly poor, and we lived in the middle of nowhere, and there was no internet, so you couldn't like look up, you know, how to succeed in comedy or whatever.
Sure.
So I went to the local library. They had one book that had anything remotely to do with the entertainment business or how to get into it, How to Be a Ventriloquist. So I got the book, I devoured it, of course, totally worthless. What I decided to do instead was comic strips, because it was cheap, you know, it was paper and pens. I was making Super 8 movies and they were breaking the bank. Like, it would cost like $200 to make a movie. And that was like all the money I could make in a summer from a summer job. And so that wasn't sustainable, but comic strips seemed like that was a thing I could do. And also, they would print the name of the syndicate that the comics came from in the paper, so you could look them up, get their address, and send them cartoons. And so I did this over and over. I came up with comic strip ideas. I would send them in. I would get rejection letters back, and just did this over and over and over for years, right out of high school, you know, working crappy jobs, minimum wage jobs while I was doing this. And I didn't really get any traction until finally I moved to Madison, Wisconsin, and I sold a comic strip to the local college newspaper there. And this is, you know, probably my 12th or 13th comic strip. So I was getting pretty good at it at that point. I kind of knew what I was doing. And it was very unassuming. It was a stick figure character. And I knew how to draw. I could draw really well. But I also knew how to write, and I knew that writing was so much more important than drawing in comic strips. But this particular comic strip idea necessitated stick figures. That's just what it was. But it ran in the newspaper, and people assumed that I couldn't draw, or assumed that this was like a crappy effort. But that was part of what I was going for. The comic strip was called Jim's Journal, and it was a guy, Jim was the main character, and he just told you what he did that day. That was every strip, was his daily journal. And the strip caught on big time, and it became incredibly popular on campus. I started selling t-shirts. I syndicated the comic to other college newspapers. It was running in maybe 100 other newspapers at its peak. When I had enough strips together, I put out a book collection that I self-published and hand-delivered to bookstores. And that book made the New York Times bestseller list. Believe
wow.
it or not. Yeah. So I got a call from Andrews McMeel, who are like the best publishers of cartoon collections. They do The Far Side, The Calvin and Hobbes, and everything. And that was like my big break as far as I was concerned. I mean, I was already doing pretty well. I was making a living doing comedy, and I was pretty happy. But when they called, I was like, well, this is my ticket. And I made less money after signing a book deal with them. Because, you know, when you self-publish a book, you make all the money.
Sure.
And when you publish a book with a publisher, you're getting at best like 7%, even though the book was now distributed all over the English-speaking world. And that strip, Jim's Journal, is still, I don't do it anymore. I did it for 10 years daily, and it's up on GoComics /Jim's Journal if anybody wants to check it out. You'll notice it looks very similar to a strip that it inspired, because one of the college newspapers where the strip ran, it ran right next to another college student's comic strip, a guy by the name of Jeff Kinney, who just kind of had a typical comic strip in his college newspaper. But he was greatly inspired by Jim's Journal to create his own stick figure comic where the main character told you what he did every day, and each strip was like a journal, and it was called Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Wow.
So check that out if you haven't heard that, and compare the two. It's funny, like now I tell people, yeah, if you like Diary of a Wimpy Kid, you grew up on that. See, Jeff Kinney is a smart businessman because he focused the comic strip on kids. It's like clearly marketed to kids. Jim's Journal is clearly marketed to adults. So people, I tell them, like, once you're done with the Wimpy Kid books, graduate to Jim's Journal, because it's a deeper, no, it's like a deeper experience.
Sure.
in the same genre. It's a very unique comic strip. Like, it was a kind of meta comic strip, Jim's Journal was. Because, you know, I'd been through the ringer with all these different comic strips trying to appeal to a mass market and stuff, and was getting pretty experimental by the time Jim's Journal came around. But I was still very keen on satisfying all of the genre requirements of a comic strip. Like, readers have to fall in love with the characters. They have to want to see what the character is going to be doing every day. It has to be funny. It has to be surprising. And I always thought comic strips didn't really do any of that. Comic strips were always pretty lame and pretty predictable. It's one of the worst mediums for comedy, in my opinion. Like, I don't think I've ever laughed at a comic strip. They're just bad. They're hacky and they're cliched ridden and whatever. So I was trying to upend all that and really do something special. And it really did connect with a lot of people, and it still does. I still get like fan letters for people who discover it on Go Comics. And the books are out of print with Andrews McMeel. So the ownership is transferred back to me, which is great, because now I'm making the money again.
Nice. But
they put out like 4 or 5 different book collections of the strip, and they put out a treasury, which blew my mind, because, you know, the big strips got treasuries put out, but this was like a strip that nobody really had heard of unless they were in a college where it happened to be running. So that's still around. That's on Amazon, and you can get that. But anyway, so back in Madison in the late 80s, I'm, you know, early 20s, and I'm like a campus celebrity with my popular comic strip. And I move in circles with other guys who do comic strips and people who do humor. And I'm approached by these two really smart guys named Christopher Johnson and Tim Keck, who had this crazy idea of starting a college humor magazine. And I thought that was great. Like, I was all about doing more comedy and trying to get into more comedy work and whatever. So I jumped right in with them, and we started developing this new project, The Onion.
Wow, that is such a fascinating story. The Onion, I have to say, is probably one of the most interesting things that I have seen, and it's been around for so long. And some of the stories that have shown up in there, when you read them at first, you look at them and you go, wow, that really could be true. But then if you reread it a second time, at least for me, you're like, okay, well, maybe not so much. So you came up with that idea. How did you connect it with those three folks or those two folks? How did you decide, how are we going to handle the workload? Who's going to do the writing? Do we hire people that are funny? How do you hire someone to write for a magazine like that?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for the kind words about The Onion. It is weird to me now that The Onion's been around for 30 years. And, you know, when I discovered Mad Magazine when I was a kid in the 70s, that kind of like opened up a whole new door to this world of comedy to me that was amazing and wonderful. And Mad Magazine wasn't as old then when I discovered it as The Onion is now. Like, that just blows my mind. So
yeah,
there's a lot of people who never knew life without The Onion. A lot of the people on the writing staff now, The Onion has always been around for them. And a lot of people don't know that it used to be a newspaper. They only think it's a website. And that blows my mind too. So,
oh, yeah.
So there was no like planning or discussing how it was going to be done. It was just, you just dive in and you sink or swim. So Tim and Chris were doing most of the work at first. And Tim came from a newspaper family, and he kind of knew what he was doing. Just, it was in his bones. And Chris was just an incredibly charismatic and capable funny, interesting. They were cool guys. Like Tim and Chris were just cool. And I was a nerd. And so they were like good looking and they had all these like hot girlfriends and they were just movers and shakers. Like you just knew that they were going to make something happen. And so they were doing this newspaper and they were going to do it every week. And they wanted me to run Jim's Journal in The Onion, but I was pretty happy with the Daily Cardinal. I didn't really want to take a risk running it in this brand new publication. But I was all over it, and I talked ideas with them. And Tim kind of had a vision for what he wanted The Onion to be. He wanted it to be wacky, like sort of Weekly World News type parody stories. And he wanted like interesting, maybe satirical, but mostly like biting current events type coverage and stuff. And that's what The Onion largely was in the beginning. And I just drew cartoons for them. I decided, okay, you guys can't have Jim's Journal, but I'll do three other cartoons for you and I'll do them with different names and with different drawing styles. So it looks like you have this incredible cabal, you know, this incredible stable of talented cartoonists working for you. And it'll blow everybody's mind because everybody in Madison kind of knew who the cartoonists were, knew who the good cartoonists were. Sure. So, and that was pretty cool. So I came up with a couple of new comic strip ideas. I repurposed one that I had come up with before that I thought was good. And I was kind of the celebrity on staff. So they were paying me a lot of money. They're paying me $20 per cartoon, $60 a week. I think I was certainly the highest paid person on The Onion's payroll, starting with issue one, possibly the only one, because Tim and Chris, they were not making any money. They were doing all the work themselves. All the money was going into printing, which was incredibly expensive.
Sure.
And so those early Onions actually are very similar to The Stranger, if you know The Stranger from Seattle, an alternative newspaper.
I've heard of it, yes.
Yeah, so Tim, after he left The Onion, he went to Seattle and created The Stranger. So that's very much his vision. But anyway, so, you know, Tim and Chris were kind of doing everything themselves. And I was like giving them notes on the paper, first issue, second issue. And I wasn't impressed. Like, I didn't think the writing was very good. And I thought it could be a lot better and a lot funnier. And so by issue three, I was like hanging out in their off-campus housing where they did The Onion all the time. And I was writing stories. I was editing other people's work. They had a local improv guy by the name of Matt Cook who would just like write and fill the column inches. And I was like, no, there's this thing called editing where you go through and you try to make the stuff really good. You don't just like write stream of consciousness and print it. And so then I was coming up with front page ideas, and Tim and I especially would sit around and brainstorm ideas. He was so funny and such a great boss and so good to work with. He's one of these people that even today, like people who work at The Stranger will tell you he's the best boss they have ever had and ever will have. He's just smart, just a good guy. And so Tim and I were making all these jokes up and putting them on the front page of The Onion. And I was writing a lot of articles, and Tim and Chris had some of their own ideas that were super funny. Again, they were just super sharp, funny guys. They had kind of a National Lampoon twist to their comedy, you know, kind of going for the shocking or the cool, and like berating readers was always a fun thing that we would do. So after a few months of doing that, about a school year, Tim and Chris decided that they wanted out and they wanted to get, just not do The Onion anymore. They were just completely run down and beat down because they weren't sleeping. They were just doing this weekly newspaper every week, and it killed them. And they literally went down to Brazil and like went fishing for like 2 months after doing The Onion. And what they did was they sold it to me and their head ad sales guy by the name of Pete Heisey, and the head production guy by the name of Jonathan Hart Eddy. And we each bought a third of it, and then Pete and I bought Jonathan Hart Eddy out a couple years later. And so it was Pete and I, 50-50 owners. Pete was in charge of all the business. He ran the ad sales and the money and stuff. And I was in charge of all the editorial. So I had to come up with all the ideas, had to build a writing staff, had to kind of figure out what the voice of The Onion was going to be, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, a lot of people sort of drifted into The Onion looking to work for us. And I don't think I turned too many of them away. It was like, yeah, give it a shot, see what you can do. And the best ones hung around and stayed and were encouraged. And, you know, within 2 or 3 years, there was a pretty tight band of people who would regularly come to the Onion, like once a week for a meeting and pitch ideas. And from those, there might be a top editor. The first guy like that I hired was a guy named Rich Dom, who worked as a school bus driver during the day and came to work at the Onion all night. But he was really nice and really good with people and smart, and he was a good writer, like a really good writer. And so he wrote a column called Rich's Kids, which was like adventures of him and the kids on the school bus, which was really funny. And he and I would sit up late at night, like trying to come up with ideas. I remember one night we stayed up all night and came up with an entire semester's worth of front pages for the Onion.
Wow.
Like in one night. And we're just cracking ourselves up. And so we had our schedule and we, you know, wrote all those stories and put them together. And I was still doing all my cartoons at the time. But, you know, Rich mostly ran the writers' meetings because I didn't like being in groups of people. I would show up once in a while and I would always like chime in with my opinion on what stories were good and what weren't, but, and also helping develop the system that we were developing for how you write comedy. I was big on that. Like I always wanted it to be systematic so that you could lose people and have new people come in, but the system would still work. And that, little pat myself on the back here, that totally came to pass, because there have been times when the Onion has lost 85% of its staff in one go, but the system remains and the culture remains. And so readers never know that anything's going on, because the Onion always feels really consistent.
It really does, honestly. And I would never know that, especially now that it has moved into this digital age where it's online, where you would just never know. Now, you finished working for them at what point? When did your tenure end with them?
I left, I think it was like 2014, I want to say.
Okay.
And I was, before that, I was on and off. Like I would disappear for years at a time, and then something would happen where they would hire me back, or they would have a big transition and they'd call me and say, hey, you know, we really could use your help. Because I was always the guy who had the vision for the Onion. I mean, always, after year one. Before that, it was Tim. And I was merely working with and for Tim. But yeah, after that, whenever the Onion owners, like after I sold it, would think that it was either losing its way or the readership had plateaued or whatever, they would try to bring me back to inject more life in it. And I always come back, and that's exactly what I would do. I would like pump it full of adrenaline and create all these new projects and honestly funny it up. Like sometimes the writers at The Onion take it too seriously. They take satire too seriously, or they take The Onion too seriously, and they start treating it like a museum piece where they're the caretakers and the humor gets really subtle. And that always bothers me. And again, like you said, most people can't tell that The Onion isn't consistent. It feels very consistent, and I can see like the subtle ebb and flow of quality. And so, I always liked when The Onion was like pee your pants funny. So whenever it would drift into being super subtle and 2 or 3 issues would go by where I really didn't get any hearty laughs, I would always feel really disappointed. But you know, a couple of times I left The Onion in really good hands, and it was such a treat to pick up the paper or look at it online when I wasn't involved and just find it hilarious. Like that's such a treat. That's like when you have a child.
Sure.
And they grow up and they go off and they have a successful career and a successful personal life. And you just feel great inside, you know?
Now, one of the stories that I remember particularly that I found so interesting, and I had to read it like 3 or 4 times, and this actually caused me to go on to Google and research, is when Breaking Bad ended. The Onion released an article. I didn't even know it was The Onion. I don't know if you remember this one or not, that it basically gave the real and true explanation of what happened with the Breaking Bad story. From beginning to end, how it was a dream and all kinds of different things. And it was just like, wow, is that really what happened? So I had to go and I spent probably an hour researching this story that The Onion had written, trying to like compare sources. And then I went back again and I checked and I go, wait a second, that says The Onion in the pie line. And I was like, so none of it's true. But then I was like, well, it could have been true. Did you have anything to do with that particular story? Or do you remember that? Or are there any others that stand out to you that have been written that you just thought these were absolutely fantastic?
No, I don't know that story at all. I'm wondering, is that like an AV Club story? Or you're saying it was a fake story about Breaking
Bad?
Yeah,
it was a fake story about Breaking Bad, and it was from The Onion. It was hilarious. Yes, it was absolutely hysterical. It was just one, I was finding that I was doing research and whatnot for our show, and I was like, that was just one of the funniest stories that I had ever seen. It caught a lot of people's attention and threw them off. Yeah, very, very interesting for sure. So
yeah, no, I've never heard of that. I don't even know when that, what, like, when did Breaking Bad end? I don't know.
I think it was like around probably in the last 4 or 5 years. It's maybe a little bit longer. I'm not sure on the date in particular, but yeah, it was very, very interesting story. It was hilarious.
It's not, so, was it Clickhole? The Vince Gillian series Bible,
you know,
for Breaking Bad?
It might have been Clickhole, actually. You might be correct on that. It might have been Clickhole. And I wanted to ask you about that. And I know that you weren't directly involved in that, but I'm curious as to what that spinoff was all about and sort of where those ideas came from.
Yeah. So one thing that I always try to do with The Onion was assess whether it was relevant or not. And when The Onion started, the big problem in journalism, and you know, we had to print on newsprint. We had to print as a newspaper because that was the only affordable option for us. And so function followed form, and The Onion became a newspaper parody. And at that time, late 1980s, the big problem in journalism was the infotainmentization of journalism. It was USA Today making the news colorful and pleasant and kind of integrated with advertising in a creepy way. Now those problems seem so quaint. The USA Today now is like one of the most respected journalistic enterprises left.
Interesting. Yes.
I don't know that it's changed much. Everything else has changed around it. And so The Onion felt very relevant, that it was like making fun of that type of media. But then by the mid-2000s, it felt like that wasn't really the problem anymore. The problem was Fox News, because that was more like a type of news where the tentacles of our politics were really interwoven. This is like propaganda more than it is news, but it's still using the infotainment, and it's almost trying to be like a movie, like a thriller, where it's like news alert every 2 seconds or whatever. And so we started doing the Onion News Network, which was a video arm of the Onion, which was super fun and super amazing. But we decided to parody Fox News, came up with this whole different vibe for the Onion, like a different voice almost, to let the newspaper and website still be like a USA Today parody or a sort of major city daily parody, whereas the online video news would be more of a parody of Fox News. And then Colbert did the same thing, which is great. Colbert was developed by Stephen Colbert and Ben Carlin, who used to be my right-hand man at The Onion. And Rich Dom, that writer I told you about, the first one I hired, he was the showrunner, executive producer of The Colbert Show for many years. So The Colbert Show is the most Onion-like TV show that has been done, because it was... The Daily Show is not like The Onion at all, because the host kind of smirks and winks at the camera, and it's more like a talk show with funny takes on real news. But The Colbert Show was done in a character voice the whole time, and that's what Onion does. So in the mid-teens, 20-teens, the problem in journalism was clickbait. It was BuzzFeed. It was like a totally different beast. And so... this culture that had been established at The Onion of like always trying to make sure that The Onion is on top of whatever the latest problem is in media or journalism that needs to be satirized, the writers came up with this idea of a clickbait parody site. And, you know, it just like organically came through the brainstorming process that we have at The Onion, where people come up with ideas and it was deemed, you know, a worthy investment by the business staff. And so they put it together and started doing it, and they're doing amazing work. I think Clickhole is fantastic.
Yeah, it's really great, and I think it goes well with everything else that you created and developed and came up with. Now, you have a podcast now, and I wanted to talk about that.
Yeah.
Just
one more thing about Clickhole. To extend that analogy I made before, Clickhole, the way I feel about Clickhole is the way I feel like people probably feel about their grandchildren. They love everything about them. They're incredibly proud of them, but they can't take any credit for them. And I found the thing I think you're talking about. It was Vince Gilligan's series Bible for Breaking Bad.
Okay.
Is that what you saw? And it was like all in, it was a reproduction of like his document written in like Courier font and stuff.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That was hilarious.
Great work. Great work.
Yes, yes. And I just find what you do and how this all even comes about is just so interesting. I find comedy to be such an enigma. And I interview comics and I talk to them, and just how you come up with your processes and how you write things, I find it so intriguing. It's just, it's a true talent, I believe. And I thank you for The Onion. It's
You're
provided
welcome.
A lot of humor and satire and just in different stages and phases. And in fact, I was on it last night, just reading through things. And now the age of and Facebook, it's so easy to post an article from the website and just click share. And then it's kind of funny to see people look at things and you read stories and you're like, oh, wow, did that really happen? No, wait, no, from the end. So good work to you and thank you so much for providing us with humor.
You're welcome.
It's, yeah, of course.
My pleasure. Yeah, and I do the same. Like, there was a story a couple days ago about Republicans not wanting to move forward with the Kavanaugh hearings until the sexual assault accuser had been properly smeared. It's just a great little piece. So yeah, no, they're doing great work, and it's great to see.
Now I wanted to ask you, sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah, you were going to ask me about the podcast and stuff.
I did, but I did have one other question. Are
Shoot.
You familiar with a magazine online called the Babylon Bee? Are you familiar
nope.
with it at all?
Okay. No, never heard of it.
So it's interesting. You should definitely check it out. I recommend it. It's a similar to The Onion, but it deals with like the evangelical side of things, Christianity, whatnot. It's hilarious. You have to check it out. You would find it quite humorous.
And sounds like something right up my alley.
Yes, it does. I wanted to ask you, and you have to check it out because I think you will love it. It's very similar, and I'm not sure. I'm it would seem that they maybe got inspired by what you started, because it's very similar. Like, they'll post articles about things that happen, and then, but it is kind of like you say, the pee your pants funny, because you look at it and go, there's no possible way that that'd be true. Like, you know, mega church or slide to baptismal, that kind of thing. And then they post up these pictures. It's pretty yeah. funny. So,
it looks like it's, I'm looking at it now. It's humor Christians, like satire
it
for
is,
Christians.
But sometimes they will post stories that are like, you know, what you just mentioned about the Kavanaugh hearings, or it's right. hilarious. Yeah, it's pretty funny, I think.
I'll check it out.
Yeah, so I wanted to wrap up and talk about your podcast. So that's what you're doing now, and it's great. If you haven't listened to it, I recommend that you do. How did you come up with that? What was your inspiration for the podcast?
It actually started because I'm kind of a recluse and I don't really like hanging out with people. Whenever I would hang out with people, it would be other comedy people, and we would always talk about comedy. And I thought, well, I should record these conversations. A, that will give me an excuse to hang out with people, and B, other people who are interested in comedy might find it interesting. And so I started, you know, recording conversations with people who I knew in comedy, and then I reached out to other people who I thought were interesting. and started doing it. And it's called the Comedy Insider Podcast, but I'm actually changing that to the How to Write Funny Podcast. And I haven't done an episode in a while. This is the curse and the blessing of podcasts, is that you don't have to do it on a regular basis. You can stop and start. I really appreciated The Onion because it had a very serious weekly deadline that had to be hit. Deadlines are so critical to get things done. But I wrote a book about 4 years ago called How to Write Funny, which was a nonfiction book that's sort of my recipe for how to create good humor. And it sold really well and actually became the basis of this curriculum that I developed into this program at the Second City. It's a co-branded program with The Onion and Second City to train people how to write humor. And so that's become kind of an enterprise, and I'm putting up a How to Write Funny website and kind of building it into this thing. And so that podcast is just going to be dovetailed into that. But the podcast is the same. It's just me talking to other professionals in comedy about their process and how they do it, how they got into it. Anybody who's interested in comedy or how it works, which that's me. Like I'm like you. I'm still fascinated by it. I think it's fascinating what makes things funny, what makes people want to do comedy. I love getting into that with people.
Yeah, it's just, and I said it earlier, it's an enigma really, because I interviewed Jeffrey Grant. He's a comedian. He's been around forever.
Yeah.
And he was such a delight to chat with, but
yeah, I wrote the introduction for his book.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I think he might have mentioned that in our interview, but we talked for quite a long time. And he said that comedy is the most unusual thing that you can do with your life, because it's not like any other job that you would do. And I find that to be very true, in the sense that it's, your mind goes so completely different, and you talk about things and you go, well, this sounds funny, but then you put it on television or whatever you've done. And there has to be this sense of greatness that you feel when you see people laughing at your work, and people are laughing at you if you're a stand-up. I'm intrigued by it. And I think that's why I'm in this phase where I'm interviewing comedy people, because I want to dig deep. But the deeper I go with these folks, the more questions that I have. And I'm like, man, so how do you just get up there for 5 minutes and make people? And it looks so easy, but it's really not. So do you have any plans to write any more books or anything like that? I know you've got your website and your podcast. Are any more works planned in that avenue?
Yeah, definitely. So I have a new coming out October 2, which is Welcome to the Future, Which Is Mine by Elon Musk. And that'll be a fun parody book about Elon Musk. And then a month after that, I have a book coming out, oddly enough, called Outrageous Marketing, the story of The Onion and how to build a brand up with no marketing budget or something like that. Because I'm often asked to speak to marketing groups, because the people are always fascinated by like how The Onion grew and how does it have so many social media followers and everything. And we did things so in such an unusual way that I decided to write a book about it and weave the Onion story in there, like how the Onion came to be and stuff. So that'll be fun. And then I have a sequel coming out to How to Write Funny. The original plan was always to write 4 books in that series, because part of how to write funny is doing it in the right order. And the first thing you need to learn is how to write a joke. So that's what the first book is, how to write a joke. And the second book, How to Write Funnier, is how to write a longer story. And then the third book, How to Write Funniest, is going to be how to work with other people in a group to make your comedy funnier. There's so many wrong ways to do that that most people usually use. And the way we developed at The Onion, partly as a result of my reclusiveness, is a really counterintuitive method, but it really works to make sure that only the best jokes are rising to the top. And then the fourth book is just going to be excerpts from my podcast, interviews with master comedians and comedy professionals, with tips about how to succeed in comedy, how to do comedy at the peak of your ability, and so forth. So those books are all coming out at some point. What else is going on? I'm doing a parody of the Holy Bible. That's a big, big project. Speaking of the Babylon Bee, that book is called Holy Bible! Exclamation point, a parody. And it's going to be a big book. Working on that with people from the Second City program.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that all sounds so exciting, and I'm looking forward to that. I'll buy all the books, especially the ones on comedy. I find even improv, all of that, so, so intriguing. Well, Scott, thank you so much for taking time today and being a part of my podcast. It was a real pleasure and a real honor to chat.
Well, thanks for your time, Brett. I appreciate being here with you.
Thank you so much, Scott, again, for being a part of the podcast. Be sure to head over to Amazon.com and pre-order his brand new book due to come out October 2nd, and also head over to his website. All of that information will be available in our show notes. That brings today's episode to a close. Until next time, let somebody know that you love them, let them know that you care, and we'll chat soon. Be blessed.
That brings today's episode to a close. Thanks for listening in. If you enjoyed today's episode, head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a kind rating and review. It really does help. Until next time, cheers and be well.
What's up, everybody? It's Brett Allen from the Open Mic Podcast. And first of all, I want to say thank you so much for listening and being a part of the show. The fact that you listen, that you download, and that you subscribe every single day blows my mind. And from the very bottom of my heart, I want to extend a thank you. Now, Anchor.fm, the company that supports the podcast and that hosts it, has offered a brand new way for you to support my show, the Open Mic Podcast. You can now sponsor the program monthly. There are three ways that you can do this. There are three levels: 99 cents per month, $4.99 per month, and $9.99 per month. And the cool thing is you don't even have to have the Anchor app to do it. Wherever you listen to this show, there is a link that you can go to, and it will take you to the anchor.fm/theopenmicpodcast homepage. From there, you can pick whatever level you want to support the show. It's that simple. And the cool thing is you can either do it once or you can do it reoccurring. It's totally up to you. The other thing about this that is super cool is that it's tax deductible as well. Doing a podcast can be expensive, and there are things that come up, like new equipment, new studio upgrades, new microphones, new music. All of that cost money. And I would absolutely love to partner with you on the podcast. Just head over to www.anchor.fm/theopenmicpodcast. Click the link. It's that simple. Thank you so much for listening and for your support. Cheers and be well.